Excelsior, and welcome once again to Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure, where we go through the Marvel Cinematic Universe in order. Me, a seasoned expert, and Tavy, the newcomer, and I guide her on this journey. So as I've mentioned, I am here. I'm Zach Walliner.
And I'm Tavy Phillips.
And so we're here today to talk about Iron Man 2.
Iron Man 2.
Yes, so I know you seem to enjoy the first one and enjoy the character of Tony Stark. So I imagine you were looking forward to this. And let's just start right off. What did you think?
Yeah, I was. I was glad to get back onto, I don't want to say familiar ground since it's all very new to me, but at least there were characters I'd seen before. I will say, overall, it was pretty enjoyable. I didn't think it was quite as enjoyable as the first one. I think they reset the character a little bit in terms of likability, almost like he gained a lot of ground in the first movie, Tony Stark, from being this sort of dirtbag, industrialist, capitalist, war profiteer, and then he grew a heart and started doing good things. And this one, he sort of fell back a little bit, and he wasn't completely disgusting, but it starts with him with the dancing boy at the beginning of the movie. It's like he's back to his old playboy billionaire tech bro ways a little bit.
Yeah, I guess I did notice that while watching the movie that I guess it's an arc, a character arc, where he's moved on. He was enlightened from doing the weapons and stuff in the first one, and he wants to be a better person, and he wants to help the world, but he still has some of his negative traits that he's got to work through. Because through this one, he's still got a bit of like misogyny going on.
A little bit, yeah, for sure.
Obviously, the reporter that he hooked up with at the beginning of the first one, she pops up again with Justin Hammer, who's a business rival. And they're talking about, like, I don't know if he makes the line or Pepper says it, but something like, oh, yeah, she did a spread on Tony last year. And he's like, yeah, and she wrote an article, too.
So silly. Very eye-roll inducing.
There's a lot of these windows and remarks throughout it. So I guess that's an area he still has to work on at this point in his journey as a character.
Yeah, which I guess is realistic. People don't just change. People are complicated. I'll allow it. And they do a pretty good job of setting up some emotional terrain for him. So he's struggling with some things in this movie, right? And that could cause a person to revert to their dirtbag ways a little bit. He's struggling with this existential crisis. What's the thing in the chest?
So it's a mini arc reactor.
Yeah, there you go. The mini arc reactor. It's not doing such a great job.
Yeah, the
as
metal
it was
he's,
before. He's, the he metal thinks he's dying.
Yeah,
right?
The metal he's using to power it or something with it is toxic and it's infecting his blood. He's giving himself blood tests and you're seeing these like veiny marks up and down.
Oh, yeah. The crossword puzzle on your neck or something. Somebody says, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah. He's got that going on. So that's giving him a life crisis. And he's trying to figure things out. And he promotes Pepper to be in charge of the company. But he's dealing with all this pushback from being Iron Man. There's a Senate hearing. And the government wants it. Because obviously it's this huge piece of tech. And with these defensive capabilities. And he says he successfully privatized world peace. So he gets a big cheat at the end of the thing from that.
That just made me feel just sort of, you know, the echoes of the world that we live in today, or not the echoes, maybe it was a little prescient about the privatization of everything.
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And also on the note of the real world that we're in, this one, we'll get to Stan Lee in a second, but this is full of cameos that movies and TV always do, where they put people in real world figures in media to make it seem more like, oh, look, it's like, this is in our world. This is real. This is down to earth. So I think there's Christiane Amanpour at one point. Bill O'Reilly. And
my least favorite, you want me to read the note I wrote?
Even worse. Go ahead. You want to throw that one out there?
I wrote down, I paused the movie to make a note. Elon is in this movie. I hate this movie. I didn't really hate the movie, but in that moment, I did hate the movie.
You're like, okay, well,
it was 2010. It was a different time, but still.
Yeah, he was
nobody
like,
wants to see Elon.
He was like a liberal darling, I think, at the time where everyone was like,
right, he was making these wonderful electric cars that are saving the world, right?
Yeah, everyone viewed him as just like this tech genius. I remember people were saying, I don't know if it was news articles or online discourse, but they're like, well, yeah, I mean, Iron Man's clearly based on Elon Musk. And I'm like, no, as if that was like a tribute to include him. No, he was not. He's been around since 1963. He was based on.
I was going to say, he's from the 60s. He's
Howard
from before Hughes. Elon Musk, people.
Yeah, they meant that they felt the movie version was, but clearly it's not. And
I will say maybe there's a certain feeling of the character and the popularity of this incarnation of the Iron Man, of the Tony Stark character, certainly set the stage for the adulation of a certain type of tech bro, industrialist type. It was already in our culture as something that we do. And I guess there have been plenty of tech guys that people have worshipped in the decades in the past. So this certainly didn't help the project
The
of
vibe. It was fairly
of
early on,
yeah.
so I hope it didn't turn you too off. I'm obviously you got
No.
the movie.
I enjoyed being angry in that moment.
It's one of those unfortunate movie cameos that did not age well, much like
Yeah.
Home Alone 2.
I was gonna say, if I can't be mad at Home Alone 2, then I
I
can't be mad at Iron Man 2.
don't know if you heard Christopher Columbus would like to remove that. He wishes it wasn't in the movie now.
They should just do those. You know how instead of taking the racist things out of Disney movies, they have like
A
Whoopi Goldberg do a little
disclaimer.
introduction at the beginning and say, we should talk about why Dumbo is problematic. They should have Jon Favreau come in and say, now we're going to keep this in because we can't pretend that the past didn't happen, but we should talk about why this is problematic.
That's a fair comparison. But as
So
of
I was surprised about Justin Theroux.
I
I
was
didn't
going to
know he was
mention
a
he was the writer on this.
screenwriter.
Jon Favreau is back to direct and with a little meatier role as his character.
Happy,
Yes, happy.
right?
Yep. And so, yeah, just to throw, I guess he was kind of like hot at the time for writing or whatever.
I didn't realize that. I knew him as, I guess I kind of knew him as an actor, but I had no idea he did screenplays. In fact, again, I paused the movie and went to Wikipedia and said, is it that Justin Theroux? And it was. So
Indeed, it
so
was.
educational. I learned
Of
so much.
now of Beetlejuice
That's right.
But as I hinted at before, we'll get to an ongoing recurring segment. It's time to play
Spot the
Stan.
Stan. I love cameos.
Where we see if you noticed where Stan Lee appeared with his trademark cameo in all these projects. So today we're asking about Iron Man 2. Did you notice him? Do you remember what he did? What he
I
wrote?
did. I did. It was very quick. It was blink or you'll miss him. But was he playing Larry King?
Yeah.
Is that what
Yeah,
that was?
it's odd.
That was very amusing.
Yeah, I look back at these in retrospect and they are very quick. Either wordless or almost no words, where I guess they were just sort of dipping. Oh, like they put Stan in, give him a quick little thing to do, and then they joke,
Yeah.
oh, he's like Hefner, or he's supposed to be confused for him, or we're actually literally going to say he's playing Larry King, because you know Larry King is well known for his trademark mustache.
Yeah, that was. I was like, "Is that Larry?" I guess it's supposed to be, and then you quickly move on from it
Yeah,
because it's
he's
like,
just
"Yay, it's always
standing.
good to see
Yeah,
him."
kind of like with the Hef moment. He's just like walking through a crowd, and imagine him walking through a cloud. I guess he could, maybe, if we ever. But
In our hearts, he's walking through the clouds right now.
and yeah, there's all these people who want to say something to him, press, whatever. He's like, oh, here's Larry King, and it shows him, and he just stands there with the suspenders on, and that's it. Blink and you miss it, Stanley moment. So there, you got that. I think you're 3 for 3, right, with this so
So
far.
far, yeah, I've caught him every time. I'll be
Okay.
really sad if I miss him.
No,
And
yeah, I
I
think.
refuse to cheat, though. If I don't see it during the movie, that's that. You know, I'm
Appreciate
very
that.
honest.
I appreciate that because, yeah, I mean, I think it'll be even easier as it goes on because I think they gave him more leeway and made it a thing for him to have fun with more. So these are like the real quick ones, but it goes forward. And on the note of games, unlike Incredible Hulk, we have
Woohoo,
trivia.
we got trivia.
So before we take a deep dive into the movie, because I figured a lot of the facts will come out in the game, I didn't want to go over something and then it's in the game. Let's
Then
just
have
get
it
to
comes
it.
up, yeah.
All right, what is the name of Tony Stark's father?
It was Howard?
Yep,
Howard
Howard Stark.
Stark?
Very good. Yes, probably took the name from Howard Hughes since that was a basic.
Cute. Yeah, I figured. But even more, I mean, the striking resemblance. I hope I'm not spoiling anything from the cards that comes up, but I really enjoyed John Slattery as the Walt Disney-esque figure standing in front of what's essentially a model of Epcot Center. As
Yeah.
a Disney theme park nerd who's watched all of the old Disneyland television shows and remembers Uncle Walt coming out and saying, "This is the city of tomorrow, or the city of the future,"
I think he
pointing
literally
to a
said
model
City of
behind him.
Tomorrow in the
It's
movie.
literally, I think he literally says it. And I was like, oh my God, it's just Epcot. They're not even pretending it's not
No
Epcot,
experimental
which,
prototype, but yeah, just
right, exactly. But it
hot.
was very clear. I mean, he's got the dark mustache. He's standing into the 60s as a sucker for that stuff. That really made me happy. And I enjoyed that. And there were other references to that later in the movie that I really enjoyed and got a lot out of, just
Yes.
from a pure Epcot nerd standpoint.
Definitely. Yeah, it's clearly intentional. They were going for that old school Disney vibe with those old films and stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously, he is different from the one we saw on the magazine covers in the first movie because that was just a guy hired to be on a picture.
I
So
forgot about that. We did see his father, so I guess they retcon that a little bit, which I'm fine with because I like
that's.
John Slattery the
And he is
same as
not the
Ryan.
only actor that will portray Howard Stark going forward. There is
Okay.
a difference, but I won't go too far deep into that. But we'll see. Next up, what does Tony Stark wear to his birthday party?
Isn't it the suit? He's wearing the
Yep.
Iron Man suit,
It's
right?
an Iron Man suit,
Which
yeah.
and just being a big ass in the
Yeah.
suit. That
I
was, yeah, that was fun.
had this in my notes for that. Since as things come up here in the game, we can divert a little. That scene out of all the Iron Man movies and probably all the MCU is like the closest they went to Tony Stark's alcoholism, which is a thing in this. So that's like the closest representation we're gonna get. Because again, these are movies that are meant for kids to see and whatever. They're not.
Yeah.
There's this real big story called Demon in a Bottle, and the famous cover is him looking all haggard, looking into the mirror on the cover. So that's some more heavy stuff. So here it's just played kind of for laughs, and it's showing
Sure.
him dealing with this crisis in maybe not the most productive or healthy way. It ends up
Right.
shooting his place apart and fighting Rhodey when he hops in the other armor. So even though Terrence Howard didn't get to do the next time, baby, now we have
This was an upgrade. I thought
Don
Don Cheadle
Cheadle.
was an upgrade from Terrence Howard. I think Don Cheadle's more charismatic and did a really good job
Yeah.
as, is it Rhodey? Rhodesy? What are
Rhodey.
they called?
Rhodey. Yeah, he's
Rhodey.
Colonel James
Colonel
Rhodes.
Rhodes.
I think it's James.
Lieutenant Colonel.
Yeah.
Although I was, so at the end, not to jump to the end, but I remember them saying Lieutenant Colonel. I don't know much about military rank, but shouldn't he have gotten some kind of promotion by the end for saving the world?
Yeah.
What's above Lieutenant Colonel? You should get
And
whatever's next. But
also,
anyway.
I don't know if you caught this. I think it was probably intentional, sort of meta double meaning. When you first see him at the Senate hearing, he shows up and he's Don Cheadle. And Stark's surprised to see him there as part of this hearing that he's dealing with. He says, "It's me. I'm here. Deal with it." Like he's almost talking to the audience, like, just
Right.
accept me
Yeah. It's
as
going to
this
be me, Don Cheadle, now. Deal with it. I didn't
character.
catch that, but I like that. Yeah, that makes
Yeah.
sense.
So, okay. Now, what is the name of, well, you kind of already answered this. What is the name of Tony Stark's chauffeur, bodyguard, and personal trainer?
Happy.
Yeah, Happy Hogan.
Right?
Happy Hogan. Is
Hogan. Okay.
okay. In what type of shop is Tony Stark sitting when he meets Nick Fury?
Oh.
It's a pretty memorable
Not.
visual moment.
Oh, is it that donut? The.
Yeah.
That iconic donut place in
Yeah.
LA, whatever it's called.
Randy's, I think it's called Randy's.
Randy's Donuts.
And
Yes.
the card's almost wrong. He's not in the shop when he meets them. They go into the shop, but he's in the
He's in the
donut.
donut when he meets them.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a second, I flashed back to the ending of the first movie, and I was like, in a bar, right? They were in a bar when they first met. But in this movie, he's in a donut,
No, he was
right?
in. He was coming home. He steps in his house, and
Oh.
Jarvis starts going all slow, and Nick Fury's standing by
Oh,
the window
boy.
waiting for him when he comes home, and he starts telling him about the event.
You're right. You're right. I'm
So
like,
that
why
was
didn't
the
they go
first
to the
little
bar?
hint taste, and now we get a little bit more meat of Nick Fury and what he's all about and how he plays the roles that he does as this lead super spy of this agency.
Yeah, I was happy to see him. I think I'm just always happy to see Samuel L.
Yeah, I
Jackson
mean, he
and
brings the
Peter.
Samuel L. Jackson energy. He's doing his thing
Yeah.
with this character,
It's
but he's
always a good
coming.
time. He always brings it.
So now the next one is, what substance in the arc reactor is slowly weakening Tony Stark?
I want to say palladium?
Yes, you got it.
Oh my God,
It's
why that one stuck
mentioned a few
in.
times. You got it.
Palladium. Yeah, I guess I said it a few times, so
Yeah,
yay.
good job. So yeah, that actually goes back to that meeting where he's kind of trying to help him out to they inject something in his neck and it kind of like temporarily cures that little stuff going on with the markings on his skin, but it's not like a full-on cure and he still has to work through that. Okay, so then the villain of the story is Whiplash, and it's
Right.
asking here, what is Whiplash's real name?
Wait, did they say Whiplash? Did they call him Whiplash at any
I don't
point in
think
this
they
movie?
ever do. I don't think they ever do. Remember, it was like the code name of one of the jets in the first one, and that seems like, oh, that's an Easter egg for that Iron Man villain from the comics. But then here we get him, and he's actually sort of an amalgam of different characters because in the comics, Anton, the father,
Father.
he's a
He's
character.
Ivan, right? Is he Ivan
Yeah,
Vanko?
Vanko. There you go. You got it. Ivan Vanko.
Vanko.
Anton Vanko in the comics is an Iron Man villain, a Russian named Crimson Dynamo. And Whiplash is a separate character, but they kind of semi-merged them. They
Smushed
made.
them together.
I don't think Ivan Vanko exists in the comics. I think they just had Anton there, and then they gave him a son, and then they mushed him with Whiplash. So yeah, you got the real name, Ivan Vanko.
And I'll say that it was jarring when we first meet the character. They do a nice little introduction with the father yelling at Tony Stark on the screen and then dying and the
Yeah.
son. And then the son turns into the light and just pauses for a second. And I could tell the film was trying to tell us, look at this guy. And I'm like, is that Mickey Rourke? Because I had no idea who was in this movie. was like, what's Mickey Rourke doing here?
Yeah, that's him. Obviously, the opening, since we're talking about that scene. First, you'll see it's Paramount still distributing this. We went to Universal for Hulk. We're back to Paramount still before Disney buys it, which is interesting. You got these Disney illusions, but it wasn't even a Disney product yet.
Right.
And then while the movie's opening, you're hearing that ending press conference of Iron Man where he reveals that he's Iron Man. And that's building up to where you see Vanka watching it on TV and having that reaction. And then he gets to work on his own thing because he wants revenge because of the ties. Well, actually, that ties into the next question. Who does Ivan Vanko claim his father Anton once worked with?
Isn't it Howard Stark?
Yeah. So
right?
They're fine.
Aren't both of their names on the blueprints?
Yeah. So it shows that as
Did
if
I
like
say that?
He feels like, I guess, the big arc reactor, which is like what Stark's known for, was almost stolen from his father.
Right.
I think they kind of go over the details where maybe his version of events is not quite accurate to the truth, but he blames Howard and Tony Stark for it. So then he, at the death of his father, he gives off that big primal scream and he's pissed and he sees Tony Stark getting the attention. And I think the father tells him before he dies, that should be you or something like that.
Right.
And so then he gets to work on his own. And I feel like it's probably intentional. You see when he's working, it looks like it's throwing back to Tony in the cave. He's hammering on the anvil. And
right.
The sparks, and he's got the glasses on. So it seems like that's a deliberate allusion to the
smart guy. Everybody's a scientist. I mean, you got to give it to him. He's like, I'll build one of these suits. And he does it. Like people, it defies people in the U.S. government, people all over the world trying to get this technology. And he's like, yeah, I can build it from these.
Well, I guess smart. Having that upbringing with that father parallels Tony, and they're both smart
right.
guys. Who breaks Whiplash out of prison?
Oh, Sam Rockwell's character,
and
who is called
his name?
Hammer. Hammer. Jake
It is
Hammer.
His first name?
Jake. Is not Jake?
It begins with a
John?
J.
Josh, John, Jeff?
Two syllables.
Oh, Jacob?
No.
Why do I think it's Jake? What's his name? You got to tell me.
If there's breaking news, this.
Oh, Justin. Justin. Justin Hammer. Like Justin Theroux. In fact, I can't believe I blanked on that because for a second, when he first showed up, I was watching with my husband and I said, did Justin Theroux name this character after himself? And then Sean looked it up and he's like, no, that character's been around since 1979. It's
yeah, no, he is a pre-existing comic book character. I think he's an old man in the comics, but like Cass Rockwell, and he brings a certain charisma to the role. He did a good job.
Yeah, he's good.
Is he watching all of them with you, or is it just here and there when he can?
He didn't watch Hulk with me because I was dog sitting during that one. But yeah, he's around for them. I
oh,
think
that's nice.
He's not like, he knows more than I do. He's not like on your level of Marvel fandom,
sure.
but he's definitely more in the know than I am.
Okay. So yeah, that's good. You have that to share. And I think I
yeah,
told
it's fun.
You, I'm watching.
You're watching with Penny.
With Penny. So it's a bonding experience. She's seen Marvel movies, but not in order from the beginning. So we're enjoying that. And on that note, I guess we'll throw it over to Penny's Corner to see what she has to say about this one.
Hi, my name is Penny, and this is Penny's Corner. Today, we're talking about Iron Man 2. The fun fact is, in one of the scenes that the main villain gets his bird back, the reason why is because he killed the guards that had his bird and took it because the guy who was working with him got mad at him for, like, not working on the right thing and working on his own thing. But anyways, that's all for today. I'll see you guys next time on Penny's Corner. Bye!
Yes, that's true. Very, very good point, Penny. Yeah, interesting how that played out. But yeah, getting back to the trivia, let's see. Where is the race held at which Whiplash attacks Tony Stark for the first time?
Monaco?
There you go.
Monaco?
You're on a
Monaco.
Roll. Aside from
I
Hammer,
am.
Aside from Hammer's first name, you've been really acing it.
So far. I mean, I did just watch it last night, so I'm glad that I've retained it at least this much in 24 hours.
Good. Yeah, you're doing good. What animal does Whiplash request after being hired by Hammer?
He wants his bird.
His
bird. It's a very funny scene, too, because Sam Rockwell trying to understand what he's talking about and going, a bird? Is this a bird in Russia? Do you want, we got birds? You know, it's funny. I like the, I won't say chemistry between those two, because I don't think there's particular chemistry with Mickey Rourke and him, but Sam Rockwell did a good job of playing off of the
Yeah,
character.
Yeah, they bounce off each other well with each character
yeah.
supposed to be. So yeah, it's the bird, as Penny referred to just now. It's a
cockatoo,
I think, right? I forget. I'm like,
right?
Cockatoo
cockatiels are the little
cockatiel.
Ones or the big
little.
Ones? I can never remember.
Yeah. My wife's family had birds. They had cockatiels and parakeets and stuff like that. But a cockatoo, I think they have a cockatoo that lives across the street from them, my in-laws. And you think about where they're asking, what is the bird? Where's the, why couldn't they get the bird? Because he gets a cockatoo and he's like, yeah, it's the bird. It's a bird. But like, where's his actual bird? Like,
what's so hard?
Shouldn't
like,
it be at his place
to...
that he lived?
But these people have a lot of, yeah.
He's got all these
this
resources.
Is doable.
He could have
can't just get the bird? Yeah.
Oh, going back to the race and Monaco when he attacks him. At one point, you see there's an alleyway exchange with Whiplash, and a guy gives him a fake ID and whatever to get him there to attack Tony. I didn't catch it this time, but I think it's shown that they're a member of the Ten Rings, which is the organization from the first one.
Right. I don't remember.
I thought that's visually or somehow noted, but I didn't catch it this time. But I'm pretty sure the intention is that. So it's another...
I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it wasn't there, though.
Yeah, yeah. That,
we know my brain.
I could double check, but I remember that from early when I first saw it, or somehow I saw it. All right, what job title does Tony Stark pass on to Pepper Potts? That should be easy.
CEO.
Yep, CEO of Stark Industries. He puts her in charge.
Yeah, that was a nice little scene. Her realizing that he's offering it to her, like, and then tearing up a little.
Yeah, the way he says things sometimes is like confusing. She's thinking one thing and he's saying another. But which fruit does Tony Stark bring Pepper as a present, only to find out that she's allergic to it?
Strawberries.
There you go.
He's like, and he trades his watch for them. He gives the fruit vendor a very expensive looking watch.
He's like, aren't you Iron Man? Oh, good job.
Good job. We're fans or something.
Yeah. And he's like, well, look, it's a step up. I did realize there was some correlation with you and Strawberry. What's her real first name?
Virginia.
There you go. You got that. Which police force is called to arrest Justin Hammer?
Police force?
Well, that's an odd question. It's not like, who cares? But just put the pieces together. Where are they in the end when she calls the police?
Is it, I mean, in Queens, so is it the NYPD?
There you go, yeah.
There you go.
An odd question to have. You're not the most interesting
movie
of the Marvel
makes
movie.
Okay.
Who calls the police to have Justin Hammer? So, well, we just kind of said.
That's Pepper. Pepper does.
All right, what does Agent Romanoff go by when she is hired as Tony Stark's assistant?
It's Natalie, I want to say Rushton or Rushman.
Oh, there you go, Rushman. Natalie Rushman.
Rushman.
Okay. Good, yeah. So this is the movie that introduced
I didn't know she would show up in this.
Yeah,
and I think I literally was like, is she playing the same character that she plays later? Because you can't be in the culture and not know.
Yeah, so you had some awareness that she plays.
I was aware. I mean, she's very famously just like sued Disney for releasing her, is it Black Widow? Movie on streaming or something.
Oh, right. That was a whole thing because somehow with the profits and whatever. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. And so I knew that she was in these movies, but I guess I didn't expect her to show up so soon. And I was like, is this the same character or whatever? But then I caught on as the movie progressed. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I think I mentioned earlier, they're building to the Avengers and there are like the top tier Avengers characters and they get their own movies. People who are like a notch down or so. They kind of appear in those movies just to get them introduced in time to play a role in Avengers later. And she's one of those. What'd you think of her in this movie?
She was good. She did a good job. It's sort of mysterious and you're not quite sure if she's flirting with him. Is she trying to get information from him? What she's doing there. But I liked the scene where she was in the car and Happy's driving and then he's ogling her as she's changing. Because I'm thinking, how funny. Like, do you have to change into your cool leather super spy outfit to do this? She had to like take her hair down just to fight bad guys. Like, it had to happen. So she's like, eyes on the road.
Yeah,
it was good.
I guess it's harder to fight in just the work clothes, and maybe she has all her gadgets in the...
That's true. There's probably gadgets and stuff. It was amusing. And it made me think, are these the first superheroes that are not really a secret? You know what I mean? Like, Tony said in a press conference that he's Iron Man, and then he's in Monaco, and he has the briefcase, and it just turns him into Iron Man right there in front of everybody. This is a far cry from, like, a telephone booth, and, Clark
Kent. I don't know if it was intentional on Marvel's behalf to do it right out of the gate, but when he says, I am Iron Man, at the end of the first Iron Man movie, in the first movie of the MCU, it's not just a big moment for him and his arc and what he's doing. It kind of set the precedent that secret identities are not much a thing in the MCU. It's been a classic thing in comic books. You want to protect your loved ones, etc. But they really are not that common in the films and shows. Maybe with a couple exceptions.
It's interesting what when these comic books were so popular during the Cold War, right? And spies were all the rage and secret identities must have been more in the forefront. And we're not really doing that so much anymore in the culture. So it makes sense that they'd be a little bit more open. Now we're in the age of mass media. Everybody knows everything all the time. So maybe no more secret identities.
I mean, to a degree, I guess she kind of had an identity because she was playing one role and she's
undercover.
But at the same time, when she's in the boxing ring, when she's first introduced with Happy, she like takes him down with this spin.
She goes right in there. Yeah.
It's spindly.
Unlegal, you said?
Who would have thought that kind of might give something away a little bit?
Right.
It is impressive how they had her backstory. Like, he's looking her up online and she's got all this credits and stuff, and she's done a photography, like posing and modeling. And
yeah.
They did that all for the benefit of Tony Stark potentially looking into her. And
yeah, that's some good story. Back cover there. Good cover story. Deep cover, man.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see what else. Okay, with which agency does Agent Romanoff work? That's duh. You got
S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Yep.
I actually really appreciated the scene, I guess, with the donuts, right when Nick Fury comes on. He just starts explaining stuff. I'm like, thank you for explaining things, Tony, so I can understand what's going on.
I guess, you know.
I appreciate exposition.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, in The Great Muppet Caper, when Lady Holiday says it's plot exposition, it has to go somewhere.
That's right. Exactly. Hang a lampshade on it.
There you go. Who accompanies Agent Romanoff to confront Whiplash at Hammer Industries? Well, you kind of alluded to already when you're talking about
did
the...
I?
Well, you're talking about how does she get there when she goes to...
With Happy, of course.
Happy. So he's like, I'll come and help. She's like, you can help by staying in the car. And he still goes in and he's getting his butt kind of handed to him for a while.
Yeah.
You see her taking down guys left and right. And at one point you see her do what's kind of become her signature move that you'll probably see more of. The thing where she wraps her legs around a guy's head and kind of like takes him down that way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did notice that.
We've seen
that was
more
pretty
of
cool.
That.
At one point, she was impressive.
Yeah, no, it's in good action and how it's filmed. And she kind of like at one point goes like lands and positions herself in a cool pose.
Right.
Which reminds me, I was going to bring up in the beginning when they're at the Stark Expo and AC/DC's playing and everything, and you're following him. First of all, what was he doing up there? Was he like on a mission up there? And then he's like, oh, now I'm going to arrive at the Stark Expo? Or it's like, he's like, okay, I'm going to fly up really high just so I can make a grand. But he does that.
I feel like it was the entrance thing. I think he was trying to make
just,
an entrance.
Can
I just say also having the Stark Expo at the Flushing Meadows Park, Corona Park, World's Fair grounds actually made me really happy. I don't know why, seeing it all lit up and sparkling. Because when you go there now, it's just sort of sad. It's just like
a relic
ghost of a cool thing, right? Whereas in this movie, they make it this like vibrant, what it was supposed to be, right? This expo, and there's twinkling lights and everything's lit up. And I appreciated that, I guess, as a New Yorker.
I was going to say, as a New Yorker, obviously. That makes sense. Also, I mean, you gotta have some suspension of disbelief, and not to be too nitpicky, but he lands. I was gonna mention what I was alluding to. He lands and he sticks the fist down. I first knew it was a three-point landing because it's something you see a lot in certain genre stuff and animation, whatever. Then later kind of gets known as a superhero landing as it became popularized, and something else we'll probably get to at some point. It's something that's a little offshoot, not in the MCU, but leads to having a connection with it. So we might diverge to some legacy media at some point. Marvel stuff that Marvel Studios did not put out, but now that things are growing and changing, there are connections. So we might stop at a point with this timeline and then go backwards to revisit other things and then get back on to see where we were going with that. So a little heads up on that.
That's fun.
Oh, yeah, there's the superhero landing. But I was also going to say, he lands, he's in the Iron Man suit, and then the thing comes up from the ground like he had in his garage where he's experimenting that he used to suit up, and it unsuits him. He's wearing a suit underneath, and it's like perfect.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be all wrinkly and scrunched in there?
Breast suit. That's the magic. Meanwhile, he alludes later in the movie to peeing in the suit. Like at his birthday party. Yeah. So that's you go from this gorgeous press suit coming out of the Iron Man outfit to he's peeing in it. All of the variations, anything you can do in a suit, Tony Stark will do.
Yeah, there you go. Back to the cards. Who's the director of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I mean, we already touched on this, but go ahead.
Oh, it's Nick Fury, right?
That's right. Agent Romanoff is fluent in English, French, Italian, Russian, Vietnamese, Mandarin, and which ancient language?
Oh, she speaks Latin.
Yeah, there
during
you
the
go.
Movie, right?
When they say ancient language, it kind of gives it away.
There aren't that many, but I remember actually speaking it. And also because somebody said something like, nobody speaks Latin or something. And my husband said, Tavy does. And I go, no, I took it in college. I do not speak Latin. I don't remember any Latin.
Well, you probably you know more than me, probably, I'll say. All right, and we already kind of covered this. In which New York neighborhood is the Stark Expo held?
Queens, Flushing Meadow Park,
Flushing.
Corona.
Yeah, Flushing is the answer. And who is CEO of Hammer Industries?
Justin Hammer.
There you go. Half of the answer is in the question. Who demands that Tony Stark turn his technology over to the people of the United States of America?
Is it Rhodes? Is somebody else making Rhodes?
No.
Too?
Well, early on, remember, he's in that hearing. Who is
him? Gary Shandling? Senator Gary Shandling.
You remember the character?
I almost forgot, wasn't it? I do not. When I saw him, I was just like, oh, there's Gary Shandling. I can only see Gary Shandling.
Sure. Senator Stern.
Stern. Okay, sure. I'm never going to remember that. It's just
not far off from Samuel Stearns, who was in
Stern.
The last movie we did, Incredible Hulk.
That's right.
This is just Stern, but yeah, they have him kind of going back and forth with Tony in the hearing. Play for comedy, obviously, bringing Gary Shandling in. Who does Tony Stark hire as his new personal assistant to succeed Pepper Potts?
Natalie Rushman, yeah.
/ Black Widow. And who does Justin Hammer hire to perfect his line of armored suits?
Ivan.
Yep, Ivan.
Right?
Yeah, some of those are kind of...
Whiplash, I guess. Although, again, I don't remember anybody calling him Whiplash.
No,
it makes
never,
sense.
They
he
never
had
did.
The whips.
Yeah, they
but
never
nobody
do,
said
but
it.
It's just, if you know, you know.
It's understood. Yeah.
Oh, that's another reference to the comics. Going back to the Senate hearing, he says, oh, I'll take Secretary of Defense. In the comics, at one point, he actually was the Secretary of Defense.
Of course he was. Again, uncomfortably close to how the government in America is currently being run.
Yeah, true.
But we won't dwell on such things.
Yeah, this is escapism. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, this is a lighthearted series that we're doing here.
Yeah.
An escape.
Oh, this is a quick real world tie. I noticed he at one point asks Pepper to wear a mask, a surgical mask. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, and she says rude. Yeah, I caught that too.
That's
because back
of
in
ahead of its
2010.
Time.
Yeah, very ahead of its time.
I
And
think
I'm thinking, he's right, Pepper. You don't want to get people sick. Wear the mask.
I think maybe that combined with another detail, maybe they're trying to imply he's got like a little OCD or something, because they mentioned times I don't like being handed things, and now he's telling her to put on a mask if you're sick. So they're giving him these.
That feels a little Howard Hughes-ish to me. Like,
that's true.
It goes with the eccentric billionaire thing, right?
So yeah, I didn't
he's
even
got some
I didn't
famous
even make that
germphobic ones.
Connection. Yeah. Oh, and you mentioned the suitcase. That's a nod to the old comics, because he used to carry the armor around in the suitcase. It was all like foldable. And oh, I better be armed, man. Open up the suitcase, unfold it, put it on. There was
I was a little embarrassed at how long it took me to realize why they were so bring the briefcase, bring it, come on, let's go, bring, don't forget the briefcase. And I'm like, what do they care about? What's in this briefcase? Like,
it
duh.
Didn't click.
What's in this red and gold briefcase they're so worried about? Duh. Took me a second there.
Yeah, there's actually
I like when he sliced the car in half with the whips. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's an old 1990s cartoon. 90s were a heyday for Marvel animation. He had his own cartoon, and in it there was this whole suit up sequence which involved the suitcase. And I think it was a regular animated show, but they would go CGI for parts of that suit up sequence. That was a fun time for being a Marvel fan. They kind of call that the original MCU, because there was a lot of interconnectivity. One of my favorites was X-Men and then Spider-Man, but then they have Fantastic Four, Iron Man, Hulk, Silver Surfer at a point. So a lot of those, they would have the same voice actors play the same roles in the other shows, so it was kind of like they were an interconnected universe that predated and maybe even partially inspired what became the MCU eventually. So it's like, if we didn't have some of those cartoons, maybe none of this would have happened. But yeah, that was
love that I have, as a child of the 90s, you know, 80s and 90s, I had no awareness of these cartoons. Where were they? What channels were they on? Were they
yeah,
on
like
network
Saturday
TV?
morning, I think. Like,
okay,
X-Men and Spider-Man, I think, were both on Fox.
Okay.
Fox Kids kind of line up. Fantastic Four and Iron Man were in a block together. I don't know if they were on Channel 11, PIN, before it became like UPN and WB and all that. No, wait,
sure.
UPN
that
was Channel
makes sense.
9, I think.
Nine. UPN was 9 and PIX
WB
was 11.
And then CW is what the
CW
11 was,
yes.
After WPI. They were in a block together. Stan Lee would introduce them and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's amazing how much passed me by.
Yeah, well, you know,
I just had no
if
idea.
You weren't into this comic geeky stuff, you don't necessarily
just didn't
have an awareness of it.
I did enjoy the sequence when the suitcase turns into the suit, because I was a child in the 80s and it was very Transformers and Voltron-y and all that stuff from my deep childhood. So that was fun. See, I love nostalgia.
Sure. Yeah, but sometimes when you have a suit-up sequence like that and the villain's present, it takes a little time for the whole thing. It's visually appealing to the audience, but it's like, okay, it's fairly quick going from a suitcase to a body thing, but he's still got to wait for all the little...
Still, realistically, the guy could be killing you while you're doing that. The whip could be cutting right through his neck while the things are buttoning up.
A little suspense.
Bend our disbelief.
Yeah, there you go. Rhodey says it once, you're doing this lone gunslinger routine. Tony's trying to do it all on his own. Like, even in the Senate hearing, he's acting as if he's solving all the world's problems single-handedly. But I think, again, it's saying he can't, and that's probably a little alluding to when he's going to have a team-up of some sort. And of course, in this movie, it also shows Rhodey enters the fray, and he becomes his, not necessarily sidekick. They kind of joke about him being a sidekick or not being
right.
A sidekick. So at least he's got a buddy to work with before.
An ally.
Yeah, before the whole team-up. And then they are at the party. He's got those antics, like we mentioned earlier, where he's all drunk and he's peeing in the suit and making people laugh. And they're these women, and they're throwing bottles in the air.
Doing, and watermelons. He does the Gallagher.
Yeah, yeah. He even calls out the Gallagher. Watermelon. And you got another Real World cameo. You got DJ AM. Rest in peace.
I had no idea who that was. I was like, this is somebody. Because, again, film language, I recognize they're making a deal of showing us this DJ, but I had no idea who that was.
Yeah, he says at one point, he's like, hey, Goldstein. And he pops up. Like, so everyone else is a veteran. He kind of like sheepishly pops up from behind his laptop.
That's right.
And he's like, give me a song to kick my buddy's butt to. And I think during the fight, similar to a moment we mentioned in the first Iron Man, he's like, you want to be the War Machine? Rhodey's code name as that character in the armor is War Machine.
Okay.
So, just like Obadiah was detail. Like, we're Ironmongers.
No idea. Right.
Obadiah mentioned that. That's his code name as a villain. And here, Tony is giving him the War Machine name. So that's that little call out where they get the code names in. And then we see Coulson is back. Agent Coulson, who had...
That's right. I was like, the guy I recognized last time as somebody from S.H.I.E.L.D. is back and going to the land of, what is New Mexico? Land of make-believe.
Get confused with Mr. Rogers.
Right. I can't remember.
You remember what
is New Mexico? I do not. the land. I can only think of the land of make-believe now.
If you can pull it up. Let me give you a chance before I reveal it. It's got magical kind of connotations.
God, I'm just a blank. You got to tell me.
Land of Enchantment.
Enchantment! Make-believe enchantment. It's all the same thing.
Sure, yeah. So Coulson appears, and he's kind of like there to babysit Stark a little. He did say at one point, I think Fury says, talking about him again, you're not the center of my units. We got bigger problems in the Southwest region, and the Land of Enchantment line comes up, which is an actual nickname for that.
That's the state nickname.
Yeah, and Coulson is babysitting him. And during that, because Fury's telling him, again, they kind of had a temporary fix for his Palladium problem, but he's like, you can solve this problem. And he brings him a trunk full of his dad's old belongings to help kind of give him some clues. Now, did you notice anything when he opens it? Anything in there? Anything stand out to you?
No.
Okay. Well, there's different stuff in there. And I caught this. I thought it was more obvious from like my memory, but it's not. It's kind of, if you know, you know. In there, he opens it up and you could see a hint of the cover of Captain America Comics number 1 from 1941, the very first issue that introduced Captain America, where he's giving Hitler an uppercut in the jaw. You don't see the full cover, but if you know that issue, what it looks like, you can see like a little corner of it. So it's kind of introducing, again, they always hint towards things coming, that fact that he exists in that world. And that even in universe, they made a comic about this guy, so it's like,
right,
so the comic actually exists in this world.
Oh, that's interesting. And am I crazy, did I see something that looked like Captain America's shield or something?
I was gonna get to that next too, so
because it's wild to me that I recognize something like that, because I've never seen anything with Captain America.
The iconography of that,
but it's shield. Iconic, that's why things are iconic.
Yeah. They spread past us super nerds. I forgot to bring it up during Iron Man, the original, when he's at home after having flown around and stuff, and the yellow gantry or whatever is taking his part of, for like a blink and you miss a thing, when Pepper spots him with that, that thing is on a table in the background. So that was one of the early
So he had it.
Easter egg.
He just had it.
Yeah, so it's one of those Easter
eggs. An art collector. He collects things, I guess.
It's still never been quite revealed what that version of the shield is, because it looks like it's a work in progress and it looks technological, but they never really dive into it. This is the most extra screen time that thing gets. So it was a quick blink and you miss an Easter egg in the first one. And now here it is when he's trying to solve the problem of his reactor. He's building this whole thing in his lab and he has it. And Coulson's shocked that he has it. He's like, do you know what that is? And he has him hold something up and he slides it under and it's just a level.
Yeah, to level the surface.
Iconic thing from this hero of World War II, and he's just using it for that. So again, played for laughs in there. He's trying to solve the problem and he's looking at his dad's old notes. In his notes, he sees one page and there's sort of a cube in a cube, and that's gonna come into play. So that's another one of those hints for things to come. Okay. And then he's watching the old kind of Walt Disney thing.
Yeah, that's a touching little scene
and
there.
There's little outtakes and he's like, I want to show you my body, you know, he's joking around, but then it goes and it cuts and then it comes back and he talks to the camera. It seems like one of those moments where it's breaking reality, where maybe this is what Tony thinks he's hearing, where he's like, Tony, but it's actually he recorded a message to him. Because early on in the film, he's talking about how his dad never said he loved him or even that he liked him.
Yeah,
he was this busy guy, kind of like Cats in the Cradle vibes.
They set it up really nicely, actually. They set up early that he and his dad had a distant relationship. The best day of his life was when he dropped me off at boarding school. So it really helped it pack a little bit of an emotional punch there when he discovers the secret footage of his dad talking to him in the future and
Definitely,
saying
yeah.
that he's the best thing he ever made. That was beautiful. It was a sweet scene.
Yeah, it's touching. And he kind of gives him the hint that it's almost literally saying that that whole sort of Epcot-esque display.
I love this scene. This is the best. The scene when he basically looks at the map, he pulls out like the Walt Disney miniature model of the City of Tomorrow. And then he has the computer make a wireframe it or whatever so he can then look at it and start manipulating it and getting rid of the trees. And he's literally, it looks like he's taking Spaceship Earth from Epcot and making it the new element. Like it was so thrilling.
Yeah.
As an Epcot nerd, seeing that scene play out, really liked it. It literally even looks kind of like a geodesic dome.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And stuff with the triangles on the, and I was just like, oh, Epcot, yes.
Yeah, and it's just like,
we all have our nerd stuff.
Yeah,
know?
Sure, of course. Howard's not so subtly saying, here, this is the thing. And he picks it up when he visits Pepper. It just happens to be hanging around in imperfect, intact condition.
Yeah, of course.
But he gets it, yeah, it makes the computer input, and then he's doing that sort of hand wavy technology stuff. And then he makes it where it's like an atom. And then he synthesizes, which I never understood. I'm like, is this based in real world science? He starts getting these tubes in his lab, and then he's blasting a laser, and somehow it creates something. And
yeah, this part, I thought, this is a lot of science theater. It's like they're sort of glossing over things and he's doing cool stuff and then coming up with, does he ever name this element? Did
well,
I miss the name?
I was gonna mention that, yeah, because it's some sort of like particle collider. I guess it maybe is based somewhat in real things. When it happened at the time, when it's talking about a new metal in Marvel, I think I was not alone in thinking it's going to be this one particular element that has a fairly big role and that would hint to future things. But it does show up in the future, and then it kind of doesn't make sense that he would have created it because of its own story and origin that's revealed down the road in the later project that we thought it was alluding to. Apparently, in the novelization of this movie, it is referred to as that element, but then it seems kind of contradicted later on when they have something more about the element in a different film. And then I saw something where, like, it says, I guess maybe it was in some outside material, whatever, that he called it badassium or something. But
something that Tony Stark would say. I thought maybe they were leaving it intentionally vague or something in case they wanted to retrofit it into something
later.
Because why not give it? I was like, what is this? Triangulum? Like, what is this? What are we calling it? Starkium?
Yeah.
Tony Starkium?
Yeah, but it works out for him. He doesn't have the problems anymore and he's good to go with the new reactor and he activates and he's feeling it, getting that power, getting juiced up with it. Oh, I was just going to mention, they're big into connectivity, especially early on. They really wanted to establish how much the whole share world thing is, because it wasn't really done ever before. And even people who've tried otherwise have never had the level of success that Marvel has. But sometimes even they kind of screw up. They have things that kind of counter, like something will come up down the road.
Contradict.
Well, this doesn't make sense with that. But when you're making something so big and with so many moving parts and different writers and different directors,
yep.
I guess it's bound to happen unless you're just really locked in and overly controlling.
Sure.
But yeah.
You have to leave a little bit of room for evolution and things and poetic license so that the story can be told.
Sure. And like they've seen, maybe even sometimes they've caught themselves on it and then they'll retcon it somehow later.
Right.
That, no, it wasn't that thing. It was this thing.
Well, you got to give something for fans to argue about on the internet, too. Things can't be completely perfect at all times. There has to be some reason for nerds to argue.
Of course, of course. Oh, it's funny you mentioned about the car ride with Happy and Black Widow. I think I just recently saw someone post like a meme image on there just coincidentally. And it was like, John, are you sure we need this scene here? He's the director. No, it's really important.
I know, I'm thinking, you know, we're not watching the director ogling this young
star.
Female star. What?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? 2010.
So then everything comes to a head at the new Stark Expo in Queens after Vanka was arrested from the attack. Then Hammer broke him out, like we mentioned in the trivia. And then he's trying to have him work for him, use his genius to help. They have the same goal. The enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing. Take down Tony Stark. He's building these things because they're trying to replicate. Like they show at the Senate hearing, other countries are trying to replicate Iron Man, but they're all failing. But he feels this guy's got what it takes. And he has all these suits and he wants him to work on them. But then he's like, no, drones better. And he's making these drones. And he gets in the drones, but then they also, through higher-ups ordering him, Rhodey ends up being part of all that, too, where he, after he flies away from the fight with Tony on the birthday party, he ends up going over there, and then they equip the War Machine suit with all these weapons from Hammer Tech.
Right.
So he's involved in it. And at one point, because he's doing something different than what he wanted him to, he's not a person to just be told what to do, Vanko. Then he gets mad at him, and he grabs the bird and the bag, and they take his shoes. And
right. That's a funny scene, too.
You get his pillows.
How do you feel? You're not happy when I take your stuff, right?
Try to get him in line, and then he leaves him with these two big bulky bodyguards. But as Penny mentioned earlier, they are killed and taken care of. It's off screen, because I think they had to do off screen, because when I think about it, like, they're trying to imply this guy, he's tough, obviously he can handle it, he's not intimate. But you look at these two big guys against one, you'd think they'd be able to handle it, but you know,
yeah,
they'll just do it off screen to just imply this guy, oh, he's not to be messed with. So he kills them, he gets the bird back, and soon when they're doing the Hammer presentation at the Stark Expo, things go haywire. Not only does Rhodey's suit get controlled by Vanko, but also all the drones turn and they start shooting, because Tony shows up because he realizes Vanko's influence, because Vanko, I think, just called him and intimidated him.
Right, yep.
So then they're trying to kill him, but all these bystanders are there, people running away, falling glass and everything. And then we have the big brawl. And eventually, obviously, through Black Widow's help, she's got some technology herself, too. When she's in the Hammer building, she reboots Rhodey's suit.
Oh, the suit, so he can control
it. He's back.
Again.
So yeah, now they're at least on the same page, fighting those drones and stuff. And they show off cool different weapons. Tony uses this laser beam. He tells him to duck, and it slices a bunch of them in half. And he's like, how can you do that sooner? He's like, I can only do it once. And then Whiplash himself shows up in his final boss suit, where I think people did complain with this movie. A lot of people don't like this movie in the history of things. I like it fine. I get they feel like it's a repeat. It's another him going against another guy in a bigger suit.
Sure.
Climax. Like,
it was a bit formulaic in that it did echo the original movie. I really enjoyed, however, that final battle was again in a geodesic dome with triangles. Yeah. I have to, again, I can't
really
help
like
but
that sort of stuff.
Really referencing things that I love. But yeah, it was similar to it. Oh, here's a guy who got his own big bad suit. Now you have to battle this guy.
But he's got whips.
It's different. He's got whips.
Laser.
He's Russian.
Laser whips. Laser whips, you might say.
But I thought it was fun. Again, it was still a good time. It was still a good time. It wasn't a terrible movie.
Rhodey's...
It was just a little repetitive.
Yeah, no, I think overall, I don't think it doesn't hold up. I think it's fine. I think it's fun, and it's a good progression of the characters and everything. Then Rhodey's like, okay, watch this, take him down. He tries to shoot the thing that Hammer was really hyping up.
Right.
He calls it the ex-wife. So he shoots this little missile. It just clinks right into the armor and falls to the ground. So
Hammer Tech.
Yeah, commentary. Yeah, he's like, Hammer Tag, right? Yeah, commentary on Hammer's real abilities. Doesn't quite back up what his words say. Also, I'll mention this briefly. I won't say the whole thing to get into it. We'll come back to it later. There's one point, because obviously these things are programmed to kill Iron Man, and the crowds are fleeing and everything. And in the rush of it, there's a kid standing there, and he's wearing an Iron Man mask. Obviously, they sell these things because he's this hero in the world and everything. And the kid's wearing it. And so then one of the drones is like, obviously mistakenly identifying it as him. But then just in time, he flies down and blasts it, and it makes the kid feel like, oh, wow, did I do that with the pulsar blast? And then he's like, nice shot, kid. That was a one-off thing then. And then fan theories down the road came about, and I really do not like this. Marvel went ahead and validated a fan theory, and I don't like the fan theory. I don't think it sits well. I don't think it matches what they're trying to say, and I don't like when they do that, because they probably just feel like, oh, hey, yeah, we'll throw the fans a bone. But it never sat well with me. But the guy who runs Marvel and the director of a film down the line were both like, yeah, that's that. So I'll leave it at that for now, and we'll come back to it when it has relevance. I don't want to give anything away.
I'm guessing that kid is theorized to be someone else later, but I'll let it unfold.
Yes, so they're like retroactively saying, oh, well, actually, that kid, and that doesn't sit well with me as a for reasons we'll get into another time. It looks like I think I covered everything on my end. Do you have any other thoughts we might not have gotten to yet?
Just scrolling through my notes, I was happy to hear. Is it Paul Bettany? Is that the actor who plays the voice of Jarvis?
Jarvis, yes.
I was happy to hear him again. Elon is in this movie. I hate this movie. Captain America's shield. Flushing, geodesic dome at the end. Oh, can we talk about the bit where I think Nick Fury says Iron Man passed the test, but Tony Stark didn't?
Oh, right, yeah, no, I should touch on. I should touch on.
A consultant? So does that mean he doesn't get benefits?
I had a few things on the back of my paper. I forgot. So yeah, the ending kiss when they're fighting a little bit, but then they kiss. So it's like that seals the deal on that romance.
Sure.
Obviously, the tensions were brewing the whole time. And
yeah, that was good.
There's that wrap-up scene, like the debriefing with Nick Fury. And you could see a lot going on in that place. There's sitting with. There are screens in the back and stuff. I think on there you see that news footage of those university kids with the Hulk where they're giving him his name.
Oh, missed that. Okay, that's cool.
And then there's also a world map and you see certain areas are highlighted. So there's one in Africa. There's one that's in the ocean. So these were hints to the people of certain characters and things that might be on the horizon. But yeah, he says, okay, we're good with Iron Man for our Avenger initiative, but not Tony Stark. They're saying he's a narcissist and all these characters.
Which is true. Traits. You know, good for them for calling it out.
Character defects. But I was surprised by that when I first saw it. I'm like, well, how's that going to work? He's going to be an Avenger. And then they say, we'll keep you on as a consultant. And I'm like, well, what does that even mean? How is that going to work? I found it an odd way to end things, but we will see where that goes soon enough.
Yeah, it smacked to me of, we need you to be around, but we want to reserve you to still star in your own movies and not just be part of this bigger club. So we'll just have you as a side member of the club or something. It was strange. It was like they were trying to align something for future movies, but I wasn't quite sure where they were getting at. But consulting Avenger is a very funny phrase.
Yeah, okay.
No benefits for you.
And then on that note, I guess I should, before we wrap it up, touch on what comes and what was alluded to multiple times in the movie up to that point where we talked about the Land of Enchantment.
The post-credit sequence.
Yes, so we get that credit scene. So you obviously watched it this time around.
I skipped it correctly this time. Credits. Got to the end.
So what did we see there?
We saw, and this is another little piece of pop culture that just makes its way through osmosis.
Sure.
That feels to me like it's Thor's hammer. Am I right?
That is right.
So in a big crater in New Mexico.
Yeah, you see Coulson driving and he's on the phone. He says, sir, we found it. And then it pulls back. There's this crater. And then you see the hammer sitting there. That's Mjolnir. That's the name of Thor's.
Of course, from Norse mythology. Yes.
That's setting up that will be our next film.
So that's our next film. So is it Thor? Is that the name of the movie?
It's called Thor. Yeah. First one's called Thor. Oh, yeah. That reminds me, too, when we're talking about titles, this is the first movie that is a sequel, and it's the first movie that's a numbered sequel where it's just Iron Man and then it's Iron Man 2. It is the second to last numbered sequel because the next time we'll get it is Iron Man 3 and we never get numbers again. I guess it's just
no more numbers.
A change in the age of movies where it's all about subtitles.
Sure.
So, everything going forward, it's all going to be subtitles. So like maybe the first movie is character name. Second one is character name, dot, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Subtitle.
Phrase.
Colon. Right. Not dot, dot, dot. Colon.
Yeah.
Subtitle. And even an upcoming original solo movie has a subtitle and it's not just the character's name. We'll get there when we get there. But yes, this Thor, which will be a big departure from all we've seen so far, especially from the more grounded Iron Man, Tony Stark element. This is taking place, a lot of it actually does take place on Earth, but we're dealing with characters that are from a totally different kind of realm. And there's this very mythological feel to it. So
that sounds fun.
Yeah, get ready.
I gotta tell you, I'm racking my brain and I couldn't tell you who plays Thor. I feel like I should know it and I don't. No, I'm going
to
discover it. And then I'm going to feel silly. I'm going to go, of course, it's what's his face. Okay. I knew that. But okay, so that'll be next week.
Kind of breakthrough role. He had a small role in a big blockbuster before, but I don't know that he did much else of note. And then Thor kind of shot him into the stratosphere. So
I'm going to feel silly once I see it. It's going to be dumb moment.
It depends on how hooked in you are on Hollywood stars and stuff.
That's true.
Not having seen the Marvel movies, you haven't seen the Thor stuff. And that's true.
I might not have
done other movies, bigger movies since, but might not be your sort of speed.
Not my thing. So I look forward to discovering it.
Yeah,
I thought this was a pretty good one. This was fun.
Yeah, always. So thanks for coming on again. And I hope everyone enjoyed listening to it. And we'll come back next time. And until then, we'll see you next time. See ya.
See you next time.
Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure is produced and co-hosted by Zach Walliner and Tavy Phillips. Featuring Penny Walliner. Edited by Zach Walliner. Theme music by Luis Humanoid. Cover art by Chris Giaruso. If you enjoy our show, please be sure to leave a nice review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. And follow us on all the major social media sites and apps at Zach Tavy Marvel. That's ZachTavieMarvel. Thanks again for tuning in. Nuff said.